everyone, welcome to the Cultivate Podcast with Grove Church. I'm Charlie Lofton, the lead pastor there. And today we've got Mark Freeman with us, expert in philosophy, apologetics, theology, deep ponderings of all questions, and answerer of all questions. Congratulations.
All questions.
All questions. No matter what question I got, you got the answer. It's no pressure, though.
I think I'm just going to ask the questions today.
You just have to know everything to meet up to my expectations. So we have been, over the last couple episodes, we've been kind of pondering big picture questions and trying to answer some of them. And we spent the first couple of episodes talking about the existence of God. And the first episode, we kind of talked about it in a more relational way, about just kind of just personally why we believe in God versus not, just kind of our own personal experiences with it, just kind of our own intrinsic motivation rather than the intellectual arguments that that speak to the existence of God. And then the last episode, we spent some more time on those intellectual arguments that people have put out there, and we kind of ranked them. Yeah, you had some favorites and some less favorites, right?
Me too. The last three all sound like the same thing to me, but that's okay.
That's right. Well,
I try to simplify things.
That's right. I like that. It's like, man, that's what you're expert in. Simple. You're the simple expert.
That's a nice way to say that.
That's right. I like that. Well, today we are going to spend some time talking about what historically has been referred to as the problem of evil. And if you've never heard that phrasing before, once I put it out there, you will understand what I'm talking about, and we'll have heard it, not only have heard it before, but have probably pondered on it before. But the problem of evil ultimately becomes shorthand for a particular way of asking and addressing a pretty significant question slash problem that people have with, if God exists, why is the world this way? And so in mid-March, I had the opportunity to speak on this topic a little bit. And you're talking about, I don't know, you ever feel this way? Like you're getting up there to preach and you've got 30 minutes to talk about an issue that has been controversial in the church or really in humanity since time began. And volumes of books have been written about them on both sides. And you've got to introduce the topic and answer it in 30 minutes before the keyboard player comes out.
Mm-hmm. And the room is full of people that have dealt with it at all different levels, right?
Right. So
somehow, you know, communicate and say something of substance.
Right. So
that's when I pray a lot.
I got 30 minutes. It's the first Sunday of spring break. Now tell all of these people how and why there is so much evil in the world and why they should trust God anyway. It's no big deal. Then don't worry, piano guy's coming.
He's coming.
He's coming. And then you got to be done, and you have to have said enough to make it feel like it was worth their time. So anyway, problem of evil. We kind of put it this way. And have you ever heard that phrase before, the problem of evil? Okay. Sometimes I wonder how widespread that phrase is. But the argument, such as it is, works this way. We've got three truths that don't seem to go together. The first one is that God is all-powerful. He has the ability to do whatever he wants to do. There are no limits to his power. The second one is that God is all-loving, that he is full of love and compassion, kindness, goodness. So you've got a good God that loves, who has the power to do whatever he chooses. Third, we live in a world with, at its simplest, we'll just say too much evil.
Is too much?
Well, you know what I mean? It's just like, I did something bad and something bad happened to me. I mean, just like we can understand that. It seems greater than just normal cause and effect. There is so much pain and so much evil in the world that a good God who could do something about it should do something about it.
Yeah, and bad things happen to good people, to quote good people.
Yeah, it's just an overwhelming, insurmountable amount of evil. And so there is enough evil and pain and suffering in the world that it cannot be explained away simply, right? And so there's And so because of that, as people try to resolve this and the way that this is, it's presented that way, then those three things can't go together. Because if God is loving, he would do something about it if he could. And he's all powerful, so he can. So he either, one, must not be powerful enough to do anything about it. He must genuinely not care. Or maybe we're wrong and there really isn't evil in the world. And so I'm just quickly, we talked about this on that Sunday, but I just kind of want to catch everybody up because not everybody was there that Sunday. Again, because it was the first Sunday of spring break and because just life is what it is. Anyways, so you can say then, okay, well, maybe God is not powerful. And there's a group that the theology is called process theology, or sometimes people refer to it as open theology, where you've got a God who created, who is the ultimate cause of the universe, like we talked about in the last episode. He is the ultimate cause of it, but he does not have the power to control it in any way. So he was a creator, and he has some power. He obviously had the ability to at least get the ball rolling, to kind of start this thing up, but does not have the ability to control. He is loving. He does care about us, but can't make anything happen. And so the way that this often gets described is I can date myself here a little bit, like Jiminy Cricket from Pinocchio, like a conscience, like a positive force in the universe, desperately trying to get you to make the right decision, but doesn't have the ability to control your decision. Not a God who has the ability and is choosing to not use it. He just really can't. He does not have the ability to make you do anything. So if you're going to hurt a child, he wants you to not. He would stop you if he could, but he cannot. Not because of a moral choice he's making to let you do whatever, but just a real limit. Sometimes it gets described as the carrot that you put in front of a donkey. So you're sitting on the donkey's back, you put the carrot in front because you want the donkey to go a particular direction. But ultimately, the donkey is going to choose where he wants to go. He could choose to ignore the carrot if he wants to. So God is that level.
Is this a personal experience from your life, riding the donkey with a carrot?
You don't know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. I just wondered if you had done that in El Dorado at some point.
Because sometimes, man, now this, we'll dequeen this up a little bit if we want to right now. people talk about, it's like boiling the frog. There are people out there who have no idea what that analogy is. About boiling a frog. Do you not know the boiling frog?
I don't think I know.
You never heard this? And it turns out, I think maybe it's not even true. Like, it's just become this expression that if you throw a frog into a boiling thing of water, it would jump out. But if you put it in just some normal water and slowly heated it up, the frog would eventually. Have you never heard this before?
Yes, but you said bull.
Boil.
Oh, I thought you said the bull and the frog.
Okay, I'm
trying to figure out.
Listen, I'm not taking
the bull and the frog.
I am not taking diction advice from someone from Dequeen. Write that down. Anyways, where were we? Oh no, I've never ridden a donkey. I don't think I have. Have you ridden a donkey?
No.
No, of course you have. Don't lie to me.
There's some horses that look like donkeys. Okay. But I don't think I've actually ridden a donkey.
Okay, so other people would take out that God is loving. So those would be kind of like deists. A deist who believes that there is a God that created everything, but he is completely disinterested and dispassionate about what happens. The God that is so big that doesn't notice or care. And that's why the world is the way that it is. Then you've got people who you think, well, there's no one who would say that there is just an unacceptable amount of evil in the world. Everybody recognizes that. But there are, I don't know if you've ever encountered anybody like this, people from some Eastern religions that would say that evil is an illusion. Mm-hmm. And that ultimately, the more you detach yourself from this world, the more you'll recognize that what we call evil and pain and suffering are illusions, and you can really escape this thing. And it is really evil and pain and suffering are an illusion of the mind. There's some Eastern religions that are like that. I think Christian Science is a little bit like that. There's some other cults over the years that I think that have created those sorts of things. But ultimately, as Christians, we do not deny any of those three things. I do believe that there is an unacceptable amount of evil. I don't look around and think this is a perfectly good amount of evil. This feels fine. There's bad things in the world, but bad things are going to happen sometimes. And I can understand why God wouldn't do anything about it, because it's not that big. It feels unacceptable. And I do believe that God is all loving, and I do believe that God is all powerful. And so rather than doing away with one of those three, I believe that a theist Christian has to wrestle with, how do I make sense of a world where all three of those things are true? And kind of like what we did with the, does God exist? Rather than trying to make intellectual arguments to kind of rationalize why the world is the way it is, and kind of how do we intellectually grapple with this? I think I'd rather start with a personal question. How do you wrestle with that?
That you're asking easy questions today.
No, simple questions. Simple and easy aren't the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that this is the week that we're recording, because I think the first time that I really came face to face with this was on a Good Friday many years ago, when a good friend of mine was in a drowning accident, and I was in the water with him and tried to save him and couldn't. And in the days and the years, maybe even this week, as I try to reconcile, you know, why, I mean, this was a guy that you would say deserves to live, you know?
He didn't do anything. He didn't do anything to deserve this.
I mean, I even at that time recognized a better man than me. If I was just trying to keep a scorecard, I had no good, you know, I could come up with no good reason why that young man at age 20, that his life was taken from him. And I can come up with, you know, 100 ways that it could have played out differently and he would be with us, that, you know, God could have entered into the equation and changed the story. And so, what was your question? How do you deal with it?
Okay, well, that's a good answer to, when did you first start pondering this question? Because that's almost a 30-year-old story.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, I was 21.
How did you wrestle with it then, and how are you still wrestling with it now?
Yeah, which is, you know, crazy. I mean, I had seen tough things, but had not really experienced them at that personal of a level until then. And it undid me for a while. I actually had a guy in my life that was helping me learn the Bible and teaching me things about God. And this sounds very uncaring. It felt uncaring for a moment. Over the years, I've realized how it was maybe the most caring thing that was said to me during those days. But he said, I guess this is when we find out whether Mark believes God is sovereign or not. And it took me a while to marinate on that. Do I believe what you said, that those three things exist, or all three of those things are true, and that this thing can happen, and God still be good, and God still be in control, and yet this thing that it's hard for me to understand,
right,
can happen, and all the pain that it caused, and God still be good and still be all powerful. It's honestly been a long journey of faith, but I actually had one. I was this guy was on the football team, and another one of the players came to my house that afternoon, and he made an interesting statement. He said, if God, if we were all crying, and he told us to stop crying, and he said, if God watched his only son die and didn't rip him from the cross and save him, then God very well could have saved Antoine and chose not to. That doesn't make us question who God is. He has his ways, and they're beyond us. Which just was an interesting thought.
There's an implication there then that God had a purpose. There was a purpose in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, want might be too strong of a word, but he had a reason for this to happen. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very strong statement that made me think through, and it's the reason why every Easter, when it rolls back around, all those emotions kind of come back, because, so God did have a reason. Now, we know that was Jesus. So what about my friend? What was going on there? It is interesting if I start to try to, think about purpose and the things that I have seen happen in the aftermath of that, and the impact that his life and his death have had. It's pretty incredible. I can feed some purpose into it.
So I think, I don't know if we touched on this when I was speaking or not, but like when God acts, he chooses to act. Obviously he has a reason. Does God have to have a reason to not act? Right? If God chooses to do nothing, does he have to have a positive reason? I'm choosing not to act because I want this to happen, because if this happens and this happens and this happens and this happens. Is the natural order of things God intervening? And so if he doesn't, he needs to have a reason why he's intervening and a reason why he's not. Or is the natural order of things God doesn't intervene, and sometimes he chooses to intervene? Does he have to have a, quote, good reason to not have prevented a bad thing from happening? Or does sometimes that's just the world that God has set up. God has set up a world where bad things are going to happen. You understand that question?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's interesting because earlier in a podcast a few sessions ago, you were asking the question of why do I believe that God exists?
Mm-hmm.
And one of my examples was a moment two different times that I was near death that I feel that God stepped in and intervened.
Mm-hmm.
So how do those two things work together that I would believe that he would at some moments, and at others that he would not?
Because obviously, when you think about the existence of the world from the beginning, there have been billions of times where someone has died,
mm-hmm.
and God has not intervened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, death, in some ways, again, if we go back to previous episodes, if we were pure atheistic scientists, well, death is a natural part of the world. Death happens sometimes, and sometimes it happens in, quote, normal ways, and sometimes it happens in abnormal ways. And we fret the abnormal ones, and we absorb the normal ones. But a pure atheist would say, well, death is just, all death is normal, even if the nature of it is shocking. But it seems like, really, for the Christian, and especially for a tender-hearted Christian, I think that there is something in us that, even though I think I both agree and disagree with the atheist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, death is inevitable, but it doesn't doesn't feel right. Death always feels wrong.
Yeah, even though we know that.
Even though it's inevitable, it feels wrong. What do you make of that? Like, why does death feel wrong to me?
I think we just expect things to move on. Like, you know, especially like this example of a young person who I have expectations of spending a lifetime with.
Right.
A friendship that I expect to have. And now that person is gone, and that feels wrong. It has really challenged, you know, if I do believe in this God, and I do believe in eternal life, then why the sadness? You know, this guy, his mother was a strong believer, and she was another one that scolded us at the funeral because of our tears. Which is shocking to me. It was just such a different perspective. But at the core, it's what I believe. I mean, should I be sad that he is with the creator God that he loves so much? The sadness, I think, is more around the missing.
I think you go to Genesis 1-3, and I think there is a part of us that is longing for the world as intentionally initially designed. It was initially designed as a place without death. It was initially designed as a place with perfect connection with the Creator, perfect connection and relationship with the natural world, perfect relationships with one another, and no death. And all of those things, the brokenness between us and God, the brokenness between us and nature, the brokenness between each other and death itself, all of those things are a consequence not only of that moment in Genesis chapter 3, but all the subsequent moments since then. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a part of us that is yearning for something. I think there's still something in us, in the nature and the image of God that we have in us. I think there is something that is calling out to the way the world was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel right because it isn't right. It isn't right that death is natural. Mm-hmm. Death has become natural because it is a consequence of something that Adam and Eve did, and we ultimately all have participated in. I'm not making an original sin or sin nature statement there one way or the other, but they did it and broke the world, and then we're just adding on to that. But there is this thing in us, I think, that is yearning for something different, which has even got us asking the question, even setting up the problem of evil, I think is less about non-believers aha-ing us. How can you believe this? Look at these three things. It's insane. I think it really is more birthed out of the faithful trying to make sense of a world that just doesn't feel like it's the world that it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, I mean, I think you could frame it in such a way where the evolutionist worldview doesn't make sense. If we're constantly evolving, then why is everything morally getting worse?
Right.
I think there is something in all of us, be us atheists, theists, or anything and around that, is saying there's something wrong with the world. This isn't how it's supposed to be. And again, I talked about this a little bit on that Sunday when we talked about this. I think one of the things that we have to add into this is our own culpability in it. That the world is broken, and we contributed to its brokenness. I mean, it doesn't. It helps a little bit if somebody dies, if somebody gets drunk and drives their own car into a tree. Well, okay. It gets a little more difficult when it's somebody else got drunk and ran into you, mm-hmm. you know, But even that makes a little bit of sense of just like the interconnectedness that we all have. We did this individually and collectively, and God kind of views us collectively. But the kids suffering of a disease, you know, not based on anything anybody did, or a tragic drowning, like that it just it seems like no matter what kind of simple answers you give, well, sin broke the world. Sin has consequences, and we're all interconnected, and sin broke the world. Like, okay. But even still, like I can get 70% of the way there. Like, okay, that explains some of it, but mm-hmm. still, I'm just kind of like, still doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think you've got a good point there. The way that how guilty we feel in it, because most of those conversations or most of those statements have to do with, man, can you believe that this horrible thing is happening, or that where is God's justice in this against these people?
Right.
And a lot of times, I mean, one thing that I think over time that has grown in my heart is just the eternal nature of things, how nearsighted we are. Mm. And if we do believe that this Jesus that we're going to celebrate his rising from the dead this weekend, that he is returning and that he promises justice, there's some, as somebody who really wants to see justice,
right,
this, that, like, I really can find peace in the fact that I do believe that this story is far from being over, and that his justice is coming. But then also, when you talk about that, well, his justice against what? What sin?
Right.
You know, a minute ago you said the, how did you describe the evil? Like too much evil?
Unacceptable. An acceptable amount of evil.
I mean, what is the acceptable amount, and what's the acceptable amount out there, and what's the acceptable amount in me? And that lie that I told, where does that lie fit? You know, as opposed to other people's lies. Other people's lies are worse or bigger because maybe they're, you know, what?
Right.
At what point am I also part of the problem? And when his justice comes, I'm just thankful that he's not a God of justice only, that he's a God of love and grace, you know, and that there is a season, a time that I can respond to that grace, and that others can as well.
And one thing I was thinking about, and this was many things I was joking about before, you got 30 minutes to talk about this on a Sunday morning. And one of the things that was in my notes that I didn't really get to was, what are we really asking when we say, I wish God would do something about evil? Because some of our least favorite stories in the Old Testament,
he does something about evil.
Is God doing something about evil? There is too much evil in this world, and God steps in to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it feels like it's a judgment of evil. And his judgment of evil brings what feels like more pain and suffering into the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Noah's Ark, the judgment of the various groups in the Promised Land when Joshua and his army are coming through, the Tower of Babel. I mean, they're just Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, they're just all these places where God does something about evil. And we don't like that either. God, why aren't you doing something? I mean, the book of Habakkuk, I don't know if you've ever really studied Habakkuk.
Yeah, yeah.
It starts with Habakkuk kind of looking at God going, there is just evil everywhere in Israel, and you're not doing anything about it. And God says, hey, guess what? I'm about to do something about it. I got the Babylonians locked and loaded. And then Habakkuk's like, whoa, 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 whoa. You're going to judge our evil with something, with a group of people more evil than us to come in and bring us pain? You can't do that. And then, of course, then it just ends with a classic God going, I'm sorry.
Who are you?
Who are you? Let me reintroduce myself to you, and then I'll reintroduce you to you, and you'll figure out the difference. And so one of the things that I think that kind of just we have to add on top of all of that is the way that God views sin is very differently than the way that we view sin. And, you know, God is good. God is loving. God is powerful. We got, you got to add God is holy in there too. And with God is holy, you can add God is just. And honestly, I think if I were going to break down the problem of evil, I think I would almost describe it differently. I was like, it's the problem of justice and grace, which is what does it mean to believe in a God that is just, but is also gracious? Because you can't be both.
Right.
You can't be both. Justice means people get exactly what they deserve. Grace and mercy are, I'm going to give you a good thing you don't deserve or withhold a bad thing you do deserve. So when God is merciful and gracious, he's not being just by strict definitions. And so when God is just, we don't necessarily like that. We want him to always be gracious and merciful, but if he were only gracious and merciful, then he would not be just.
Mm-hmm.
If he were only always just, we would be yearning for something. Why isn't he being gracious and merciful? How do those two things balance? And I think ultimately, if I were going to come to an intellectual, personal resolution to this, I would say God is sometimes just, he is sometimes gracious. If I were in charge, I would probably do it differently. But I trust him, not me. He sometimes is gracious in ways that I don't understand. To certain, like, it's always grace for me and judgment for them, right? Judgment for my enemies and grace for me. I mean, that's the way the Psalms read too. That's the way the book of Habakkuk reads. You know, it's I would do it differently. I'm glad though I'm not in charge. Sometimes I don't even want to be in charge of the things I'm in charge of. I certainly don't want to be in charge of the moral fabric of the universe and when to be gracious and when not to be. And so ultimately, I think I'm kind of left with there is a tension there in how to, not in the character of God, but in the application. Like, how do I take all of these different characteristics and apply them into these different situations? I can look at it and say, God, I think you should have done this instead of this. If it had been me, I would have done this instead of this. But he chose, and ultimately I have to decide, do I trust in a God-run universe more than a Charlie-run one?
Ooh, mm-hmm.
You saw Bruce Almighty. He just answers all the prayer. That didn't work. That didn't work.
Yeah, and that tension, man, I feel like, so many things parenthood teaches you, but I have felt that as a daddy trying to live in that tension with my kiddos, you know? How do you be both? And some of the worst moments I've felt, like, you know, kids acting bad, you're bringing the hammer of justice, and then, you know, you find out that they're sick.
Right.
And there's other things that you didn't know. And I feel like a lot of times these things that don't make sense, I feel like if I saw the full script, if I could see from the perspective that God has on the beginning to end, I would probably understand his play a little bit more.
Right.
And just my limitations. I wish it would happen this way because I only know and can see this much. I don't see the full picture.
And I think when I think about this, going back to, and I'll just kind of wrap it up with this. Think about these three ideas. God is loving. God is powerful. There's an unacceptable amount of evil. Like, I'm not trying. I think some of us were trying to put that together. I'm trying to resolve these three things. And I'm not trying to say that God's not loving. And I'm not trying to say that God's not all powerful. So the way that I'm trying to resolve it is I'm trying to say, no. The amount of evil in the world is acceptable. I'm ultimately becoming like these Eastern religions that we were talking about that's kind of like, no, it's not really as bad as you think. And so the conclusion I'm coming to is not, and it turns out when you have all the data points, you can look at the amount of evil and pain and suffering in the world and be like, yeah, this actually makes sense. No, part of the premise is the amount of evil in the world doesn't make sense to me. And so I'm not going to resolve it by minimizing the third one. I'm just going to add a whole bunch of other pieces. The culpability that we have, the brokenness of the world, our interconnectedness, the holiness and justice of God. I'm going to put all these things together and ultimately just be left with trust. Because there isn't, I can't get rid of any of those three things. And the worldviews that get rid of one of those three don't satisfy me better. In fact, they satisfy me less. And ultimately, I trust in a good God that is appropriately just, appropriately merciful, and okay, has tolerated more evil and allowed more suffering than I would have wanted, but has also loved me better than I deserve. So I'm gonna trust him. So. Wow. As always, we can just keep going. I get lost in the moment. Appreciate you guys. And Mark, appreciate you just your rawness and willingness to kind of share that with us and your story. And thank you to all of you. And as always, I guess I haven't said this in a while. If you ever have any questions or follow-ups, any of these things and questions about topics or other topics, we'd love to hear from you. You can email me at charlie@thegrovechurch.org. We'd love to hear from you. As we're trying to wrestle with big picture ideas, we're not ever trying to oversimplify or avoid things. We would love to hear from you and more things that we could say and talk about. And we're going to spend some time talking next couple weeks about Jesus and being the only way and what that has to do with other religions and all these different ideas, and looking forward to sharing that with you. And encourage you to go back and listen to the ones we talked about God existing and the arguments for that, the personal nature of God. I encourage you to just subscribe to our podcast and be able to hear all the things that we're talking about. And so thanks again for joining us. And we would love to connect with you in a personal way. If we're not, you can find out all about our church at thegrovechurch.org/connect, about joining us on Sunday morning, either in person or online. Again, thanks, Mark. Thank you for joining us. Have a great day.